trees, mountains, a curious kittadoo.
It's time for the Green Desk on 95 BFM.
A secret memo by the Ministry for the Environment, intended for the central government, reveals advice that New Zealand's failures on climate action may negatively impact our diplomatic relations. The warning stated that as New Zealand delays decisions and action on our commitments under the Paris Agreement, we may risk undermining our key alliances with countries like Australia, Canada, the UK, and countries in Europe. More importantly, University of Auckland Associate Professor Maria Amodian, Director of Centre for Climate, Biodiversity and Society, says that our climate failings are reflective of a global tragedy of the commons, which will have urgent negative impacts for our Pacific neighbours. For this week's Green Desk, I spoke with Amodian about this Ministry for Environment warning and how New Zealand should be seeking to improve its climate policies. I started by asking what her expectations and hopes are about the government's response to this memo.
So I think the first thing is that the memo exposes that there is disagreement within our government and apparently among cabinet as well about how we deal with the climate crisis. Some are taking it more seriously than others. You know, for whatever reasons, they're taking it more seriously, but others are clearly not. So my hope is that they do take our commitment seriously. I mean, we made commitments. We agreed to do things. And that we don't start looking like those other people who break their promises. So that's my hope, is that they see that we have consequences to breaking our promise, like reputational consequences. And then there are other ones, of course, that deal directly with the climate crisis.
I suspect I know your answer to this question already, but do you think that New Zealand is doing enough on the climate front, particularly with regard to the Pacific Islands and the impact that our decisions and inaction has on the Pacific Islands?
Definitely not. I think we are going backwards, both in New Zealand and other countries. We're stuck in this kind of short-term thinking that is kicking the can down the road, which is creating life-threatening, nation-threatening, economy-threatening consequences. This will affect our food, our health, greater diseases, more disasters, insurance prices, food prices, built environment, and people's lives. So absolutely, we are not doing enough for us or our neighbors who have for the longest time, you know, thought very highly of us.
Why do you think that this government's ministers have been so non-committal on action relating to reaching our climate targets?
I think that, like I was saying about the short-term thinking, there is this drive for, you know, money, for economic benefits, particularly for certain industries that have been the backbone of New Zealand's economy for a long time. But I think there's a misrecognition of how economies are reliant on a stable and productive environment. And if you destroy the health of that environment, the land, the water, the atmosphere, then those economic gifts, they are gifts, also become compromised and might even completely vanish.
Relating to what the advice was in this memo that we've seen from the Ministry for the Environment, what do you foresee, or what are some of the consequences for climate action in New Zealand alongside other countries if we don't take our commitments under the Paris Agreement seriously?
So one of the warnings of the memo was that it gives permission to others to also, you know, go back on their agreements. And I do think that that is a concern, for sure, because, you know, the more these agreements start to fray, the more, you know, others are like, well, you know, he broke his agreement. I guess their word means nothing. And if their word means nothing, then what's the point of negotiating with them? But I think there are other things as well, especially with our neighbors, with our island nation neighbors. It creates a diplomatic vacuum with those nations in which someone else steps in, and then we lose influence and we lose those relationships that we have long been, you know, developing, and we count on having those strong relationships. So it could be China. It could be somebody else. We don't know who steps in. But that is a second diplomatic consequence that will arise from that. But then the other is what I was trying to get to on your previous question, which is that there are life-threatening consequences across a wide number of metrics, squarely being placed at the feet of our global leaders, not just New Zealand, but across many countries that are not taking this seriously. So the scientists have already been talking to us about all the viruses that are spreading in places that they aren't supposed to spread normally, or they wouldn't spread normally. Already food prices are going up for certain things, and they might become completely we might be unable to even get those types of foods in the future, because they'll be either prohibitively expensive, or the diseases might also lead to wiping out certain crops. And then there are other major issues, you know, the built environment, the dangers, the losing of nations altogether because of the seawater rise, the sort of the dangerousness of just being a human and having a storm that is, you know, going to just knock down people's homes and flood people's places to such an extent that they can't survive. And then there's also the other question of insurance. There are already parts of the world in which insurance companies will either not insure at all for certain disasters, many arising from climate change, or they're so prohibitively expensive that people are going without having insurance on their homes. So these are all different types of consequences. And I think that we here need to be thinking long term rather than short term. Long term is always less expensive rather than fixing what breaks. You know, maintenance is always less expensive than fixing what breaks. And then you can't replace certain things that break. You can't replace lost human lives. You can't replace destroyed ecosystems or extinctions or that type of a thing.
Yeah, it's a pretty grim future, unfortunately, if we don't act. I wanted to ask, I mean, we are quite a small country here. On what grounds do you think that New Zealand has any role or power on a global stage to advocate for more serious global climate action?
Yeah, it's a really hard thing for a small nation, right? Because different nations have different forms of power. Sometimes those are military power, which we don't really have. Others have strong economic power, which we don't really have. But there are other types of power to bring to the table, and that is what diplomacy is about. It's about expressing those other types of power. Sometimes, you know, they call those soft power. So it could be reliability. It could be an ethical power, a moral power. It could be something else. But those kind of soft powers that make us good partners in the world and make us reliable in the world, that's a form of public diplomacy that we do have, and we can live by example. And we could be a leader, you know, if we could really be able to articulate a pathway forward rather than following the lead of a nation or two that are going backwards.
What would be your recommendations to the government to improve our climate policies and actions on a, I suppose, national or a global level in light of this warning about the impact of our climate failings?
So I think, first of all, we need to prioritize renewable energy across every sector. We already have quite a lot with hydropower and some geothermal, but I think that we should really look at our transportation, our housing, our industry, and incentivize renewable energy to the maximum extent possible, which may also require some, investment into infrastructural parts of the grid and the transmission. I think we have to shift our economic priorities to sustainable ones, sustainable economic models, which may mean changing our exports and looking at if we want to stay in the food breadbasket part of the world. It may be looking to food that does not require the mass degradation of the land, water, and atmosphere that sustains us all, that sustains all of life. Could be, you know, growing almonds or growing rice or growing something else that is far less damaging to the environment. I also think we need to reject short-term thinking and think about these long-term impacts, kind of like what I was saying earlier about, the consequences and the costs not just economic, but to human life after the fact of fixing something that you break versus, you know, protecting something before it breaks. It's just so much less costly to do the pre-protection. But that should go to any development going forward. So I think we should think about non-growth options that enrich us all, that enrich every Kiwi without having to keep growing unsustainably. So we need to also, as we're thinking about that, maybe think about how we define success and how do we define wealth? Is it always material? You know, to me, nature is wealth. It is the bank from which we are borrowing. All wealth comes from nature. We're extracting, we're taking, and we're massively indebted to that bank. So I think we have some debts to repay there. And I think we should think about those very definitions that underpin decisions that our government is making.
That was University of Auckland Associate Professor Maria Amodian on New Zealand's climate failings influencing our diplomatic relationships.
That was The Green Desk on 95 BFM.